thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Well, guess what?
Here's John Williams.
Today, perhaps three. It's 108. This is John. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue.
Lord have mercy.
We appreciate you tuning in. I'm here all the way until 3 o'clock. I'll be on Saturday as well. I'm on Saturdays, two weekdays, Monday through Friday, 1 to 3. Saturdays, 10 a.m. until noon. Follow me on the Twitter. I'm WGN King John. That's my handle, WGN King John. I want to be king someday. And if it wasn't for the paperwork in Cook County, I think we'd have that done by now. So I'll just soldier along here, thinking big thoughts as best I can. Kim, I'm glad that the rest of the world, I've kind of lost my way about Trump tweets. When he says something on Twitter and I find it outrageous, I don't know if that's just me or if, in fact, it's really outrageous, because I so often find myself outraged that I think, okay, John, you've got to stop it. It's you. It's not him. So when I heard the Kirsten Gillibrand tweet about the New York senator, you mentioned in your newscast the president tweeted today, Senator Kirsten Gillibrand would come to my office begging for campaign contributions not so long ago, parentheses, and would do anything for them, close parentheses, and is now in the ring fighting against Trump. So the president tweeted that in part today. And I thought, oh, gee, that's one of those. That reminds me of what he said. She's got blood coming from everywhere. You know,
correct,
some
right.
sort of insinuation there. And I didn't know what to make of this. And now I see that this is actually getting traction today. It's all an unfortunate distraction. We shouldn't be talking about it, and he shouldn't have tweeted it. But at least I feel a little validated in my shock and dismay at what the president of the United States said. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Shock and awe.
This is the new shock and awe.
Yes, it is.
But, you know, we really haven't started to count. Elif, you're going to have to start counting for us. Every time.
Granddaddy, every time someone says they're amazed at something crazy the president said.
The devil gets horns.
The devil gets another horn.
We're going to put money in a bucket, and at the end of the year, this would be next year, Christmas time, we'll take all of the money in the bucket, and we're going to have a fantastic Christmas party.
How does this line up in your brackets of Trump? Where does this lie?
You know, Corey Lewandowski is coming on earlier, or a little later on.
And you can ask him to bracket it.
I was going to ask him to handicap it. Okay, Corey, the Gillibrand versus Pocahontas, Senator Warren versus the videos of the Muslim violence. Which of those wins in a bracket? Which is the crazier? Which gets the most money in the bucket, Corey? He'll come on with us in a little while.
I'll say, well, that's just Trump.
That's just Trump being Trump. By the way, so here's what it's like when Trump hires you to be your campaign manager. This is from Lewandowski's book. He'll be on with us after 1:30. He said, Mr. Trump was on the phone. This is Corey Lewandowski first walking into Donald Trump's office for the very first time in New York, way up in his tower there. So, and Lewandowski has not yet been hired as the campaign manager. Trump thinks that he might let him run one of the states. Lewandowski thinks, if I'm going to give up my nice life, and he'd had a comfortable job for a while, and he's got young kids and a wife that he loves and that loves him. So Corey is fine. So if he's going to give all that up, he doesn't want a small role. He wants it all. But he's never even met Donald Trump in person, and he's never been to his office. They write this. Mr. Trump was on the phone when Corey first walks in. No surprise there. Magazines, folders, newspapers, and photocopies of news stories, mostly about him, and marked up with black pen and handwriting that Corey would become intimately familiar with, filled the desk in front of him. During the campaign, the amount of mail he received was insane. Bankers' boxes filled with notes, photos, letters, magazines, news articles, items both small and large. Mr. Trump would go through every piece of mail. Behind Trump was just glass, through which was the most spectacular New York City view Corey had ever seen. The Plaza Hotel in Central Park looked like miniature models of themselves. Awards and plaques filled the shelf under the windows. Plaques like a humanitarian award from the Jewish National Fund, and photos with famous people like a young Donald shaking hands with Ronald Reagan filled the walls. He collected hundreds of them over the years. To his right was a bench seat filled with sports memorabilia that was a collector's dream. Shaq's shoe, a Jeter-signed bat, Mike Tyson's championship belt, a Tom Brady Super Bowl-worn helmet. Look at you, right out of Central Casting, Trump said to Corey as he was introduced, a good-looking guy. There were three red velvet chairs facing the desk. Trump motioned for Corey and Nunberg, Sam Nunberg, who was working with him at the time, to sit, and they did. Corey in the middle, Nunberg to his right. I want you to know I have the greatest Air Force in the world, Trump began, unprompted. I've got a 757, I've got a Citation X, and I've got three helicopters. Corey sat there with a half smile on his face, not knowing how quite to respond. Quote, I've also got a bunch of houses and 17 golf courses. And that's Trump introducing himself. Then Trump says, how much would it cost for me to run a campaign in Iowa, South Carolina, and New Hampshire? And Corey Lewandowski says $25 million. If the number bothered the real estate mogul, he did not show it. I'll spend your money like it was my own, Corey added, just to be sure. Trump nodded again. What are my chances of winning the Iowa caucuses? Trump said. Well, you've been divorced twice, and Iowa's a very conservative state, Corey said carefully. This time Trump did not nod. Instead, he shrugged. I'd like you to run my New Hampshire operations for me, Trump said. Corey had no interest in running one state campaign, but before he could tell Trump, Nunberg jumped in. He wants to run the whole thing, sir. Trump looked at him and then back to Corey. You want me to give you the keys to the whole place? Yes, sir, Corey said. What do you think my odds of winning are? 5%. I think it's 10%, Trump said. Let's split the difference. 7.5. Sounds good to me, Corey said, smiling. How much money do you need to make? Trump said. $20,000 a month, Corey said. How'd you come up with that number? Trump shot back. Corey told him that Matt Rhodes, Mitt Romney's campaign manager, made $15,000 a month, and then he reminded him of his promise to work harder than he did. Plus, I think I should make a bonus if we finish first or second place in Iowa, New Hampshire, or South Carolina. So our incentives are aligned. You're hired, the boss said. You start tomorrow. All right, get out of here, get to work. And that begins Corey Lewandowski's trip into American history. By the way, so then when Trump comes down the Golden Elevator, at Trump Tower to announce his candidacy, where he said Mexico isn't sending their best, Lewandowski writes the speech for that. You can imagine how they poured over it. He said, you know, they really went over it with a fine-tooth comb, and they got it down to 7.5 minutes, and they hand him his campaign speech, his introduction to America speech. And Trump says, fine, thanks, folds it up, puts it in his breast pocket, says, I got this. He doesn't use the Lewandowski speech. I don't know if he should have or shouldn't have. I mean, Trump won, so maybe he didn't need Corey's speech.
I wonder if it's unusual. It seems to me that it would be for campaign workers, they have an incentive clause, you know, like a bonus, a winning bonus.
I think that's not so crazy. I mean, if
I don't know if it's crazy at all. I just wonder if it's typical.
Yeah, and I would sure ask for it, particularly if I was working for a billionaire. In fact, say you work on the campaign for 12 months. That's $240,000. Honestly, you're working for a billionaire, and if we win, you're the president of the United States. That's worth more than $240,000 to me. I mean, that's worth a million. Pick a round number. That's worth $1 million. I think he's sold himself short. He's making $20,000 a month. You and I know people that make $20,000 a month, and we didn't get Donald Trump elected president of the United States on our Salvation Army virtual kettle. Give me a thumbs up when you've got the total on that. Elif, what's the total on our kettle? Stand by for that. She'll look it up. It's 122. Speaking of making donations to our virtual kettle for the Salvation Army, if you go to page 9 of the print edition of the Chicago Tribune today, there is this full-page ad for the Joint Relief Institute. You know those people I do commercials for in Orland Park? They gently place a lubricating fluid in between the bones of your knee. And if you've got knee problems, I'll tell you what, you will love this. In fact...
And how's your knee doing?
My knee's doing fine, thank you for asking. I think that is my knee on page 9. I believe that's an unauthorized use of my knee on page 9.
The fact that you have to question if it's your knee concerns me.
Well,
are you sure?
Well, I don't know my knee that well. I mean, I've seen it naked before, but there's the knee, and the guy's hiked his pants up, and that looks like my wristwatch and my ring. And I wear French cuff shirts, and that's a French cuff white shirt. And those look like my shoes. That looks like a picture of my knee getting...
Come on, do you really think so?
Yes, I do. But it's the left knee, and they did my right knee, but they looked at both.
I don't think that's you then.
Well, but
I think that's the detail that we needed from the beginning.
But it could be reversed. You know,
yes,
negative.
That's right. That could be a reverse image. But I think they looked at both of my knees, and then we said, yeah, but the right one is the one that gives me the trouble. Yep. They said, there's the missing stuff. Then they gently placed that lubricating fluid in there. This is just dawning on me. And I only – Dr. Michael Hanna from the Joint Relief Institute is on the phone, but I wasn't planning on talking to him about this. I was just going to thank him for donating to the Salvation Army. Dr. Mike, this is John Williams. How are you?
John, it's good to be with you again. Long time.
Am I going to have to sue you or – No, I'm not going to sue you, but just give me like, hold on, let me talk to my agent. Hey, Steve, what do you think it would be worth, the use of my knee in this?
You only had one knee done, right?
Right,
you
right.
might need the other one done one day?
Yeah.
I wouldn't.
Don't press the man.
I wouldn't do it.
I think it's worth $73,000, Mike. I'm going to bill you for $73,000. Is that okay?
Of course.
Actually, I shouldn't tease you because, by the, is that my knee in there though, Mike? Do you know?
I don't think so. I'll look into it.
I kind of hope it is because I have a watch like that. I have a simple wedding band. I wear French cuff shirts and I have gray pants like this.
When you woke up, did you imagine you'd be talking to John about this?
Right.
This is not why we asked him to come on with us. You know, I've had a lot of publicity in my life, Steve, but I'm really kind of fascinated and thrilled.
Until now, your knees have always been overlooked.
You still don't even know if it's your own knee. I'm concerned.
Well, the doctor said he's going to look into it, but he's probably not involved in the details of the photograph used in his ad. Are you sure? Do you know whose knee that is, Mike?
I would look into it. I'm almost sure it's not yours, though.
Well, now I feel disappointed because this is like my claim to fame. Hey, you know in those ads in the paper? That's my knee. That's the before,
yeah,
folks.
Right?
But you fixed my right knee, and I really...
Page 9, you see my knee.
Hey, listen, I just reached out to you because when I do these Salvation Army pitches, I'm trying to get to $10,000 for the Salvation Army, and I'm calling some of our featured sponsors on my show, and I've asked them, hey, would you make a $50 or $100 donation to the Salvation Army on my virtual kettle? And before we hung up, you had almost finished making the donation. And you gave several hundred dollars. It was much more than I would have asked. Thank you for your donation and generosity to the Salvation Army, Mike.
No, thank you for giving us this opportunity and setting this up. You're helping a lot of people. And we're happy to contribute anytime.
Yeah.
It's a happy time of the year for you to think about other people who need help. I mean, we've been very fortunate.
Well, you guys have been very
Thank
generous,
you.
and I know you've been and by fortunate you mean I know your business is going gangbusters, and that's because people appreciate what you do. Let's just make this one plug for your business because this isn't a commercial. This is me just thanking you and reminding everybody else to please go to my Facebook page and you can donate to the Salvation Army. But you do think what sets your business apart is that you are more careful than everybody else to get the fluid in the right place. Is that right, Mike?
I would say there's been a lot of failures for knee replacement. Actually, a recent study looked at 4,800 patients with osteoarthritis, and one-third of them had total knee replacement before maybe inappropriate. That was a study that was done in North Carolina.
Wow.
So you look at everybody who got a knee shot, some of them think there are miracles, and other people think that they are a waste of time. I should go to get the knee replacement. And everybody was like not knowing what's happening until they found out that a lot of the times the medicine did not even get in the right place. Dr. Douglas in South Carolina and in Southern California found 30 to 40% of the shots were not placed inside the knee. So what sets us apart is that every time we do a shot, John, every time we see the medicine flowing into the knee joint, very accurate, very precise. So we can tell you before you leave that we placed the medicine in the right place. And this is why we have very, very good pain relief.
Well, I literally saw it happen. And then felt it the next weekend that I played ball. All right, so that's if you want to find out more, it's a full-page ad in today's Chicago Tribune, page 9. If you want to make a donation like the good doctor did, go to my Facebook page. I'm King John there. I got to run, Mike, but we sure appreciate your donation, and thanks for your time this afternoon.
Thank you, John. Thank you.
By the way, the number over there is 708-888-0000. That's 708 Orland Park, 888. You can remember that. And then a bunch of zeros, as in zero pain. This is John Williams in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. Thank you, Steve. Corey Lewandowski was Donald Trump's campaign manager, among other things. He co-authored with his deputy campaign manager the book Let Trump Be Trump, the inside story of his rise to the presidency. Corey, this is John. You're on WGN. Welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me, John. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
I noticed that there's endorsements, you know, on the back flap from Laura Ingraham, Mark Levin, Sean Hannity, et cetera, Newt Gingrich. The president didn't weigh in on this, at least on the jacket itself. Has the president read the book? Has he reviewed it? Have you heard from him since you wrote it?
Well, it's a great question. I had the privilege of bringing a copy to the president about a week ago, almost 2 weeks ago now, just before it was released. And I gave it to him, and I know he's had at least a chance to read it. And so I don't know what he thinks of it. I'll let the president speak for himself, but I did have the opportunity to present him a copy of it, and so I was very happy about that.
You did that in person?
I did, yeah.
I just wondered if, because you were let go from the campaign, if there were any hard feelings or if the president didn't want to see you anymore. Do you still have much contact with him?
Well, if you follow the news, and maybe you don't, and I know you might not be used to following the news, I think it's pretty well established I'm in regular contact with the president. I know that might be news to you, but it's pretty well reported, including yesterday's New York Times had that story, in case you missed it.
Well, thank you for updating me on that. You know, the book goes...
if you're going to interview somebody, you should probably be aware of, you know, the regular news of the day.
I know I should. I'm sorry I missed
that.
Okay.
So let's talk about the book. That's what we're here to talk about.
Oh, we're going to talk about whatever I want to talk about, and that is the book. And the book talks about the president's thinking and tweeting and why he won and who he is. And then you follow the news today, and a lot of it in the last couple of days has been, and some people think it's brilliant, the description of the president's diet, the food he eats, and his consumption of Diet Cokes. What do you make of that?
Well, the story that says that he drinks 12 Diet Cokes or 8 Diet Cokes a day is just factually inaccurate. We outline in the book that this is a man who is always on the move and someone who doesn't have time to sit down and have meals. And so he moves very quickly. And considering I sat next to him for probably 18 hours a day for almost 2 years, I never saw him consume that type of Diet Coke. I mean, maybe he had one a day, but he doesn't drink alcohol. He doesn't drink caffeine. And so I think, that's part of the story that may not be accurate.
Well, if he's addicted to Diet Coke, I'll give him that. Of all of the vices, that's maybe as good as there is compared to some of the other things. But you're the one that said Kentucky Fried Chicken and Filet-O-Fish and Big Macs.
And that's right. So the president's diet consisted during the campaign of being on the move. He'd work 18 hours a day. He wouldn't eat breakfast. He wouldn't eat lunch. And so the four food groups on the campaign trail, which we talk about in the book, were, you know, McDonald's, Kentucky Fried Chicken, pizza, and then Diet Coke. And that was usually at the end of the day when we were flying back for the evening after an 18 or 19-hour day. He would have one meal, and that's what it would be. And we outline that in the book as somebody who the president does not sit down and have meals. He's always in perpetual motion.
I noticed on your Wikipedia page, it says Lewandowski remains subject to a non-disclosure agreement that he signed with Trump forbidding him from making disparaging or even or revealing remarks about the candidate. Is that true?
No, it's not true.
Well, you should fix that. That's on your Wikipedia page.
I don't monitor Wikipedia, and I don't believe the Wikipedia page is accurate. I'm sure, I don't know what else is on there.
Oh, you should
I'm
see
sure
it.
There are inaccuracies on there.
Well, it mostly rings true, but I just thought that was interesting. I mean, if you're going to write a book about the campaign, then we should hope that it is as critical as it needs to be and as, you know, flattering as it wants to be. But you are not subject to any non-disclosure agreement. You can say anything you want about the president, right?
That's right. What we wrote about in this book was, and if you've read the book and maybe you haven't, you will see this is a true behind-the-scenes account of what took place during that campaign from the first day all the way through Election Day. And then if you read the book, you'll see that there is the last chapter, which is an epilogue about my time and the co-author's time in the Oval Office speaking to the president on Memorial Day.
So you actually got a chance to sit with the president and talk to him in person? Okay, I'm just kidding. Don't worry about that. That was just a joke.
I guess
it was just a joke.
You haven't read the book, because if you had read the book, you'll see in there that there are multiple conversations that take place between myself, the co-author, and the president following Election Day, including on the inauguration day and on Memorial Day, where
I was just teasing you, Corey.
That was just a joke.
Corey, my name is Steve Bertrand. I do the news for John. I know he pretty much listens to my news. And he reads the book. He's read the book, just so you know. I mean, I think you're under an impression that he's not informed here. He's read your book.
Yeah. I mean, I'll be stupid on my own, but trust me, it's not like I haven't been. I know I dropped the ball on the thing about you being in regular contact with the president, but otherwise, I've been doing my best, Corey. I've been doing my awful best.
I appreciate that, but to ask a question, which I think is just a little bit out of bounds, if you haven't read the book or haven't followed the news, I think puts me in an unfair advantage.
Well, that must be difficult for you, because there you are out on the press tour doing your book, and you were the campaign manager for the most hated politician in American history. And you don't know what you're going to get.
And you don't know what you're going to get when you pick up the phone.
So there you are. You're going to go on with Cleveland or Chicago or Milwaukee or whatever. And you don't know what you're going to get. And I think I would be in a defensive posture if I were you, too, because
I'm not defensive. The difference is, if you want to talk about the book, that's what we agreed to talk about.
Right.
If you want to talk about something else, then you shouldn't set up a premise about talking about a book and then changing it. That's all. I think it's a very fair thing to do.
I do, too. But I think in doing that, I would also like to just ask you about some of the things that are currently in the news, since you're a person who is closer to the president than any of us. And I'm just wondering if when Donald Trump was running for president, did you see his use of Twitter coming? I think a lot of us, would be following him on the campaign trail, but we didn't know exactly how that would evolve or how much a part of his presidency Twitter would be. What was your reaction to it then, and what is your reaction to his tweets now?
Well, I think if you look at what he's been able to do with his Twitter account, and we talk about this in the book, he has been able to traditionally bypass the mainstream media and go directly to the American people with his message, whatever that is of the day. Some people don't like his tweeting. Some people love the fact that they're getting an inside look at what a president is thinking and how he's reacting to things. But the most important thing that he's been able to do with his Twitter and his entire social media activity is to hold people accountable when they haven't been honest about him. And we saw it this weekend in Pensacola, Florida, when a reporter from the Washington Post put out a picture that was false and had been taken 4 hours before the president spoke at the rally,
mm-hmm.
only to say that it wasn't full. And when he was called out on Twitter, he had to apologize. The president used his Twitter account during the campaign to hold people accountable and uses it as the president to keep going directly to the American people.
Well, there's no mistake in that. And it's the context of those tweets, I think, that bother people sometimes, too. For instance, today people are talking about his tweet about Senator Gillibrand and his phrase, she would do anything to get campaign contributions. Did you ever advise him, or would you advise him today to not say some of the things that he says on Twitter?
Look, I wrote the book with my co-author, Dave Bossi, Let Trump Be Trump, which is the authentic nature of the candidate. Now, does that mean every tweet he puts out, every person agrees with all of it? Of course not. But the difference is, on many occasions, he's had the opportunity by presenting a message or going directly to the people that most politicians wouldn't do. And the American people saw somebody who was authentic and genuine and voted to make him the 45th president of the United States over, the Clinton cabal.
Yeah.
Okay, so you know him. What do you think he meant then when he said, in parentheses, and would do anything for them, when referring to her quest for contributions?
I don't know. I haven't seen the tweet. I'll read it to you.
He said someone who would come to my office, quote-unquote, begging for campaign contributions not so long ago, then in parentheses, and would do anything for them,
is now in the ring fighting against Trump. Very disloyal to Bill and crooked, used, were his words.
That's the first I've seen the tweet. I don't know what he meant by it. I'm not.
You should follow the news, Corey. It's in all of the news today.
It's not very believable. I mean,
everybody's all about it.
What's that?
Well, you came in and you were started by criticizing my friend John for not keeping up with the news. But you haven't heard that all day?
I'm also in the middle of South Carolina talking about the book Let Trump Be Trump, which is the rise of the campaign. Now, you don't want to talk about the campaign because you probably support a Hillary, but that's okay. I don't mind.
They don't have the internet there in South Carolina. I mean, if I'll tell you what, if you have a phone handy, you could just look on your Twitter feed. And
I do have a phone handy. I'm on it talking to you right now.
Oh, that's right.
And
okay.
I'm driving down the road at 90 miles an hour.
Oh, well, slow down. I don't want anything bad to happen on my watch. I don't know, Steve, what should we ask him next? I'm intrigued by...
This is a riveting interview. You guys have done a bang-up job. I appreciate the time.
I'm intrigued by the scene in the book where you are dismissed from the campaign, and you talked a little bit about that in the press, too. What was it that led to your dismissal from the campaign, and what was your dismissal like?
Well, look, what I think ultimately led to my dismissal was bringing in Paul Manafort, who was brought in to be the delegate wrangler. And you may recall during the primary process, there was the notion of a contested Republican convention that was going to take place. And Paul's job was going to be to come in and make sure that the delegates that Donald Trump won in the 38 primaries and caucuses were actually given to him at the Republican convention. And Paul decided he wanted to exert operational control in the campaign and did that. And the decision was made to have me leave the campaign after helming it during that primary process. And Paul's tenure lasted about 8 weeks before the candidate made a decision to bring in Steve Bannon and Kellyanne Conway and the co-author of Let Trump Be Trump, David Bossie.
Yeah. And what did you think of that?
Look, I thought the decision to bring in Steve and Kellyanne and Dave was a great one. And you know, I think if hindsight, you could look back on things today, I think probably based on the information that we now have from the government that Paul and Rick Gates are under indictment for, I don't know, 10 or 12 counts of money laundering and falsifying tax returns and those things, probably would have not made the decision to bring them into the campaign at the time. But hindsight is what it is, and they had a very short tenure helming the campaign for about 8 weeks, and then they were dismissed.
Corey, you obviously know the president better than most people. What do you make of the allegations against him? Do you believe that the women that are saying those things are telling the truth, or are they lying?
You know, I don't know any of the women. All of these things occurred long before I ever met candidate Trump, President Trump. And I can only tell you what he has said, you know, that he has said very clearly that these things didn't happen. The allegations are what they are. And you know, the reason we're now talking about these things again is because people in Hollywood and in the media, the liberal icons of Harvey Weinstein, Matt Lauer, and the NPR executives and so many others have taken advantage of women in a disgusting fashion, Al Franken, and there's finally a dialogue taking place about it, and there should have been.
Well, it's funny, though. So Matt Lauer's out of a job, and Senator Franken's going to lose his job, and Harvey Weinstein has been sort of disenfranchised. Should there at least be an investigation into these allegations against the president? Should this cost him his job in any way?
Well, an investigation by who? Because the American people had the opportunity to litigate this for at least 30 days before the election. These allegations were made sometime in October. The election was in November. And what we know is that the Clinton cabal and Hillary was at least complacent in Bill Clinton's infidelities, understood it, and allowed it to transpire.
So you think
the opportunity to litigate this before the election, and they said, we want a person who's going to go and change Washington. And the issue with Al Franken, here's the difference. Al Franken has admitted to groping women while they were asleep and taking photographic evidence of it and then thinking it was a game. And he has not resigned from the U.S. Senate.
Right, I know.
He's going to in the future.
He said he's going to.
What is that going to
occur? I don't know. But back to the president, though. So on that bus, though, he said worse. Did you believe that? The president, there's some reporting now that says that might not have even been him or that he's floating that idea around.
Look, all I know is, you know, what the president said, he articulated his response to that immediately following the release of those tapes. And he said if people were offended for the way he spoke, then he apologized for that. That's what he said. But he's also said it's locker room talk, and there's a difference between talking about doing something and having photographic evidence of groping people, women, while they're sleeping and think it's a game.
Yeah, but I guess maybe you're the wrong person. I know he apologized for it, but I also wonder if he did it. Does the president admit that those things that the women are charging him with actually happened? You know, why would you apologize for something
that never happened? He's been very clear about that.
Well, then why did he apologize? See, that's sort of the quandary.
The people are offended about the way he spoke, and he apologized for potentially offending someone the way he spoke about things.
Yeah. And I guess that just goes back to some of the things he's tweeted about him. I'm for instance, when he called Senator Warren Pocahontas, would he ever run something like that by you? Like, would he say, hey, Corey, I'm going to do... Did he ever preview tweets to the campaign staff before he would tweet them?
You know, there were times as we were on the campaign trail where we would discuss tweets that would go out. But, you know, at the end of the day, Donald Trump has been a success in New York real estate and in books and in television. And now as the leader of the free world. And so it was never my job to tell him to or not to do something. That's what his job is. He's the one who makes the final decision. Was I privy to some of the tweets before they went out? Of course. When I have asked him not to tweet out about Pocahontas, a woman who is self-described as a Native American so she could get into Harvard University as a professor because she claimed she had high cheekbones in her family? No, I wouldn't have asked him to stop doing that.
Well, what's the reaction been when you're out selling the book, Corey? What are you hearing from people generally?
Look, in general, it's been sold out of Amazon since the first day the book came out. It is, you know, number two, I think, right now at Barnes & Noble. It is an exceptionally popular book because the American people want to understand what Donald Trump tapped into that allowed him to be 16 Republicans in the primary, and, you know, the best, most well-funded Clinton campaign in the history of our country with all of the resources of the Democratic Party,
right,
and all of the resources of the Clinton operation, and Donald Trump beat her almost single-handedly with a fraction of the money because that's what the American people wanted. They wanted something different. And this book talks about how he was able to do that.
Has the Mueller investigative team reached out to you at all?
Look, I've been very clear about this. I'll be happy to talk to them if they want to talk to me. And I've said this as clear as I can, as many times as I can. Anybody who wants to talk to me.
Right, but I'm asking you. But
collusion, coordination, or cooperation, I want that opportunity.
Hold on. Okay. We're running out of time here, Corey. But
I appreciate that, Corey, but I'm asking you, have they reached out? Have they made contact with you?
Anybody.
So they've made no contact
here.
Nope. Interesting. Nice to talk to you today. Corey Lewandowski's book, along with David Bossie, is called Let Trump Be Trump, the Inside Story of His Rise to the Presidency. We appreciate your time today, Corey. And he's gone.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to. Here's John Williams.
Hi. Mm-mm. I'm just a little hangdog now. It's 208. This is John. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio.
Lord have mercy.
On Michigan Avenue, we're here until 3 o'clock, and among the texts that have come in, if you're just joining us, Corey Lewandowski was on with us just moments ago. He got off to a bad start when, you know, now I'm thinking, okay, am I that stupid? I said to him, has the president read the book? He said, yes, I handed it to. I gave him a copy of the book. I said, oh, you gave it to him in person. You still have face-to-face contact with him, or do you have much contact with him? Because you were dismissed from the campaign, and I just didn't know. And he said, well, if you follow the news at all, you would know that I'm in almost constant contact with him. And I gave him the book personally. And I thought, how did I miss that? And then it dawned on me, I'm not in constant contact with the Corey Lewandowski news. I'm sure every time he's in the news, it must look like it's in 20-point type to him. But Corey Lewandowski isn't in the news a lot.
You've interviewed a lot of people. I've interviewed a lot of people. It was just a bizarre way to start with him, because he was taking you on when you weren't. It wasn't like you were asking him
I didn't intend to make it a contentious interview.
It was an introductory sort of, hey, how you doing?
Right.
What's president thing?
I know. And it went off the rail. And that's because, and then I thought, well, let's help the poor guy out here. I said, I know why you're defensive. I'm not defensive. I said, you were the campaign manager for the most hated politician in American history. So naturally, when you pick up the phone and you're on in Milwaukee or Minnesota or Chicago, you don't know what you're going to get on the other end.
Especially when you're driving 90 miles an hour.
90 miles an hour down the road. And I don't know if that was a helping thing, what I said there, but I truly believe it. And I think he could have owned that a little bit and said, yeah, John, it's da-da-da-da-da-da, but blah, 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 blah.
He would have blamed you with the troopers if he got pulled over.
Thank you, Violetta. Thank you for that.
Do you
Go ahead.
Well, it just bothers me. Do you think it's possible that he was not aware of that tweet?
Oh, yeah. And then I said, we asked him, what did he make of the Gillibrand tweet today? Where
And he said he's been doing the book tour. He's not aware of it. After telling you, you should be updated on the news.
Yeah.
He said, I really haven't seen it.
I don't know about it.
Do you think that's...
I don't have a feel. I don't know Corey Lewandowski well enough to know when he's lying. But I think his answer should have been, I don't speak for the president anymore. I don't have a comment on that. He didn't have to respond to that.
He could have kissed it off so many ways, but to say
I don't know about that.
Yeah,
particularly after he's just criticized me not paying attention to the news, it was a bad place to land that. Okay, so hey, the book is just out, just in time for Christmas. Get it for all your friends and family.
Are you going to post that?
The interview? Sure, that'll be the podcast. It'll go up a little after 3 o'clock. Elif has to do it. That's her job. And our studio is Clay Jenkinson. He is the man that portrays Thomas Jefferson and Meriwether Lewis. Nice to see you, my friend.
It's great to see you, John.
After we did our show a week ago, you flew off to your daughter's graduation in English. She just matriculated from...
St. Andrews University in Scotland.
Kudos to her.
She's in the studio, too.
And you guys just flew back, and now you're back on your way to your home in North Dakota.
Yeah, and if you had done your homework,
you would know that
we were in London for 4 days and then in Scotland for 3, and that we flew back, if you had bothered to read the memo. I don't know why you don't.
Oh, shut up. So, by the way, just real quick, because I have a guest and you may join us for this conversation.
If you'd read the book, you know we're going home now.
You're not going to let that go now, are you?
No, I'm just
That's on my permanent record, isn't it?
Yeah.
You did Thomas Jefferson for us and Meriwether Lewis.
It was so much fun.
You were so good, sir.
It was one of our best times together.
I think that Jefferson show is as good as you can do that. It was really fun.
Well, you know, you were so smart about it, John, because, you know, everyone wants to know Trump, 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 Trump. What are we going to get through this moment?
The president was not mentioned by name.
We did not mention it, but you sort of touched on the fact that we now have a very controversial first executive, but let's move on. And I think everyone in that audience, there were, 600 or 700 people from both shows, they all appreciated the discipline you showed.
Well, I didn't want the president to overshadow what could have been an enlightening experience. And I think he was the elephant in the room against the backdrop of Donald Trump. Here's President Jefferson. Draw your own comparisons and contradictions for yourself. For instance, we spent a lot of time on the Jefferson show talking about the fact that Jefferson didn't like the media a lot of the times either.
That's right.
It was brutal and vicious in Jefferson's day.
But he said it's the cost of freedom.
Right. So Jefferson's point was not to disenfranchise the media.
That if you want to be a public figure, you're going to be abused. And if you can't stand that abuse, you shouldn't despair about the First Amendment. You should not be involved.
Okay. Academic and scholar and presidential historian Troy Turner is on the phone. He is the editor of the Obelika Auburn News. He is the guy who said famously now in Alabama that if he were to endorse Roy Moore's opponent, there would be bullet holes in his building. I think he was speaking rhetorically, but we've spoken to him once before, and we've called him back. Troy, you're on WGN in Chicago. How are you today? Hold on. There you are. Troy, are you there? Elif, I'm going to push the button. Okay. Troy, are you there?
I am.
Hey,
Thank you.
Welcome back. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me again.
Hey, be clear about that again. You did say that in an interview to the Washington Post or somebody, right?
About the bullets?
Yeah.
Yes, that was in passing, and it was something to just kind of talk about the passion of how folks are into this down here. It's a pretty volatile situation in some families, and even across churches, it's pretty crazy.
And so while you said that, you also don't endorse his opponent, but your editorial about the election said that Roy Moore is not a good candidate either, and it was your hope that the party would swap him out for somebody else down there, that he would quit the campaign and somebody else, a different Republican, would step in. Am I right?
Yes, correct. We just feel like there needs to be a return of integrity of some kind to that office, and raised the question that with so much going on with Roy Moore, not just the recent allegations, but keep in mind he was tossed out of office twice in the Supreme Court here, and will he be able to keep that office? And, you know, there's a lot of talk now, John, about whether that's part of the strategy with the Republicans to get him elected, but then not have him seated and possibly something like the governor end up appointing someone. So there's all kinds of rumors going on around that.
What's the weather like there today?
It's a great day. It's a great day, and from everything we're hearing on the voter turnout, there's a lot of folks at the polls today.
You know, they always say special elections are poorly attended. You would imagine if ever there was one that would be well, it is this. Do you know what the percentage of people are that they expect of registered voters to vote?
Yeah, they expect anywhere from 20 to 25%, which is low overall, but actually pretty good for this type of race in Alabama. So that actually would be a good number if it got up to 25%. But it's very difficult to believe in any of the numbers on any of the polls. There's just been so much disparity in some of them. On the street, the mood is that there's a lot of interest and a lot of turnout. We're getting a lot of local polls here. We're getting folks that are having to wait in line. So that's a good sign.
I just can't imagine not voting today in Alabama unless it was physically impossible for me.
So who does the big turnout? It's a weird one, right? Who does it help? Because Roy Moore would be hurt by discouraged Republicans who stayed home. So a low turnout could actually help Jones in a way. I mean, can you figure out who would be benefiting from a high turnout?
Yep. Most of the local or state political analysts have always said that Moore would be the one who would benefit most by the big turnout. Moore's voters, especially the older voters, are very dedicated, very loyal, and very good about turning out to vote. And that's a big part of his base. However, that's changed somewhat in the last few days because Doug Jones has had such a big push from the Democratic Party. He's had a lot of campaigns, and he's been out and much more visible. There's been a lot more effort to bring out the black vote. There's just been so much going on and a lot of momentum there that I think now they're looking at it the same way, that turnout is in their favor as well. So it's going to be very interesting tonight to see how this ends up.
Roy, Troy Turner's on the phone line. He's the editor of the Opelika Auburn News down there in Alabama. He's been kind enough to come on with us a couple of times and sort of key us in on what's going on. Did he really ride a horse? Did the candidate really ride a horse to the polling place today?
That's Roy Moore. I mean, he's the same guy you've seen in some of the clips where he's got his cowboy hat on and he pulls out his little pistol and this, that, and the other. That's part of his persona. He did indeed ride his horse to the polls. And it's kind of interesting because both Doug Jones was close to Birmingham and he turned out, and both had very big crowds to welcome them. And also, apparently, both had a hard time just getting to the poll to vote because of so much media around them. So there's a lot of attention here.
We had Uncle Henry on from one of the radio stations down there who does the morning news station or morning news on a station down there. Do you know who he is, by the way? He was a nice guy. He kind of talked to us yesterday a little bit about it. And I got the feeling that he was loath to vote for Jones. But, you know, he didn't like Moore. And that was sort of the quandary that a lot of people like him were in.
It's exactly it, John. I mean, it's. And we've talked before, and your listeners who heard us speak earlier know, it's such a dilemma for so many families because you're right here in the Bible Belt, and you've got so many folks who have just so traditionally voted in this ruby red state. But at the same time, the charges that came up against Moore were very serious. And it goes beyond that. It's not just the charges from of late with the sexual misconduct. But there are also a lot of people who are not happy with the fact that he did get kicked out of office a couple times before, and they're looking for that consistency and integrity that needs to be back in there. So, yeah, you've got some folks who just will not do anything but vote for the Republican ticket no matter what, especially when you've got their president coming out and saying, hey, you know, I'm backing Roy Moore. You should, too. It's very important, that swing vote that we got to have. And yet you got a lot of people here who just think it's the wrong thing to do. And so it's just everything you've heard.
Donald Trump does march to his own drummer, doesn't he? I mean, what's hanging over this election are these allegations about inappropriate contact with women. And then he has this bizarre slur against a female senator today on the day of the election. If you needed any reminder that treatment of women is in play, there's the president behaving badly on Twitter again today.
Yeah, I mean, it's that's what's made it tough. We've had trying to get more and more as a newspaper and as the media here on the local level, trying to reach out to get that voice. And we had a columnist today who represented, I guess you could say, a female voice. She's a columnist, and she writes a lot about faith. And it was kind of interesting her take. She took a role where basically saying for the good of the party we should punt, and her concern was we do not want to have such a backlash that it's going to affect 2018. So yeah, it's it's there's no easy answers here.
I'm going to let you go, but do you have a prediction for us?
No, I'm not going to bet on this one. The mood on the street, the feedback I keep hearing is Moore has a slight edge, but I think the Doug Jones supporters are very encouraged, so it could be very interesting.
Uncle Henry told us yesterday, he said that he thinks Roy Moore wins by 8 to 10 points. He's curiously able to play the victim card, you know, the elite media, the swamp, the Democratic Party, whoever, they're all against him, and we need to rally as good Alabamans around each other, and that's Roy Moore on a horse.
That sounds very typical. There's a lot of mistrust for national media, and a lot of people think it's because there's a hidden agenda that they're behind the Democratic side, and they don't like that. And yet, the irony of it is you have somebody like Steve Bannon come into town who's very out of state. And you know, it's very interesting what all's played out here.
Hey, listen, good luck to you. I know you've got a busy day in the news today and tonight, I suppose. So I'll let you go, Troy. I'm going to call on you one more time down the road here. But thanks for your time this afternoon.
You bet. I enjoy talking with you.
Clay Jenkinson, you know him as Thomas Jefferson, Meriwether Lewis, and Teddy Roosevelt's in our studio just swinging through. He was in Chicago a couple weeks ago to do our Teddy Roosevelt show, our Thomas Jefferson and Meriwether Lewis shows, and then flew off for a little trip with his daughter. They're back in town on their way to the airport and literally just swinging through our studios. You look good, by the way.
Yeah, it's great. We had a great, great time. Britain is a marvelous society. We went to the National Portrait Gallery and the National Gallery, and we also went to the National Gallery in Scotland. I want to say we just spent the morning here at the Art Institute of Chicago. You have one of the world's greatest art galleries, so beautifully run, magnificent in every possible way. I can't believe what Chicago has in the heart of the North American continent.
I think it's like people that live near the Pacific Ocean and don't go to it, though. I'll bet a lot of people listening to you have not been to the Art Institute in years. And shame on us, right?
Well, there's this whole new magnificent wing. But, you know, we saw Picasso, we saw Salvador Rosa, which was known to Meriwether Lewis and Thomas Jefferson. We saw American Gothic.
Yeah.
We saw the Chagall.
Nice.
The stained glass Chagall. You can't imagine what's there, and you get exhausted. You can't take it all in. But to think that Chicago is one of the art capitals of the world is astonishing.
This is what I like about you, though. You're in Chicago for 24 hours. You can do anything, right? The Bulls were in town last night against Boston.
I did not. We would have gone. The heck with art.
But you and Catherine don't go see the Bulls. You didn't go to the Blackhawks game, did you? No.
No.
You go to the Art Institute. Oh, and did you go to the library as well?
No, the Newbery. I've gone before. I want to take Catherine. We don't have time today. But, you know, John, I love doing these programs we do around the greater Chicago area. But I'll tell you what. You think of New York, you think of London, you think of Edinburgh, you think of Paris, you think of Rome, you think of St. Petersburg and Berlin. But Chicago is really one of the world's major cities. It's so beautiful at this time of the year. We went to the Millennium Park.
Oh, yeah, sure. You saw the Bean and the obelisks and all that.
You know, what an amazing magnet for people of all countries to come and take a look at.
I love the Bean. I love the ice skating rink that they have out there, the whole thing. I think the Millennium Park is one of the things we do really well.
Have you ever been to one of the, when they show the movies and the screen there, and you sit in the park, bring your picnic lunch, and you know what, President Obama had his
inauguration or
his victory
election
speech
night victory speech. Actually, it wasn't there; it was in Grant
nearby.
Park, which was right.
It was very amazing moment because, of course, you want to do that in this city.
Oh yeah,
and his library is coming here. I'm working on the Theodore Roosevelt Presidential Library in North Dakota. His presidential library will be here. It will be unique because he doesn't want to create a typical mausoleum and repository. He wants a citizens' action and empowerment center.
Yeah, it's not without controversy. Where do you put the roads? How involved is the local community? What's the exact location? But I'm optimistic they're going to work all of that stuff out.
It'll be great for Chicago to have a major presidential library. Yeah. You know, in Europe, people love Barack Obama.
Oh, do you get that sense?
Oh, my, yes.
Still.
That he was a serious player, that he
Well, when you're
was
in England,
polite.
So you're Catherine, Sally up to this microphone for just a second. It is 2:28 on WGN. I actually need to, I'll tell you what time's your flight leave?
Well, we got a few minutes.
Okay. I need to pause and do the news.
You got a bell there.
Yeah, this is a pen. It's a really cool pen. It's a pen on one side, but on the back is a Salvation Army bell. So as I take notes during the show,
it's a Merry
we
Christmas.
We are reminded to make a donation to the Salvation Army. In fact, let's just do this real quick. Elif, what is the total in our virtual kettle for the Salvation Army?
$4,000.
That's it? We had $4,000 yesterday.
That's it, John.
So that is what percentage of our total?
That is 40% of your $10,000 goal, yeah. John.
All right, thank you.
Better use that bell.
I know. Come on, gang. I'm King John on Facebook. You can go there right now and make a donation. The link is right there.
I think I saw old Santa through my window Christmas Eve. My eyes were really droopy, but I really do believe it must have been old Santa, because I saw his big red hat. And I know my mom and dad can't buy like that. Oh, no.
It's a great Christmas CD, isn't it? It's 2:38 on WGN. This is John Williams in the Allstate Showcase Studio here on Michigan Avenue. You can hear me weekdays from 1 to 3 and Saturday mornings from 10 a.m. until noon. By the way, before we put our next guest on, Bob's going to jump in here. He's the chief market strategist at Path Trading Partners about what's happened with Bitcoin on the Mercantile Exchange. I just want to see, after all of this, how it's doing. Elif, were you able to look up and see what Bitcoin's doing?
The Bitcoin stocks have risen up 4.64%.
4.64%. Do you get that, Bob? We're up 4.64% today. There he is.
I got it.
Yeah. So is that? Are you surprised by how it's doing?
I'm surprised by how little it's up.
Oh, really? Wait a minute.
We're not moving.
Wait. What are you surprised? Tell me what your thought is about where the Bitcoin market is today.
Well, it's interesting, John, because the volatility has been insane, although, honestly, it's only about 3.5 times the volatility of crude oil, which is what I trade most often. But yeah. So it's not as exaggerated as people seem versus other markets, but the volatility is it's pretty calm today. It hasn't been. But today it's been pretty darn calm, relatively speaking.
Bobby Aquino is a chief market strategist at Path Trading Partners here in Chicago. Bitcoin in the news this week because the Mercantile Exchange here in Chicago is trading on it now, the same way they are pork bellies or futures of other things like that. And so it conveys an air of legitimacy to this, even though none of us understands a lick about it. In fact, yesterday we were all kind of going around asking questions, and I said, well, I've talked to Bob for probably an hour and a half about this, and I didn't know the answers to any of the questions. So let me ask you a couple of them. Are you ready?
Shoot.
Okay, so suppose I have, $1,000 worth of Bitcoin, which wouldn't even be a whole Bitcoin.
Would not.
Could I then take that somewhere? Like, is there a currency exchange or a bank that I can go, hey, here's a Bitcoin, give me $1,700. Can I exchange that for U.S. cash?
Well, three quick things. Yes, you can, but it wouldn't be at a currency exchange because a Bitcoin doesn't physically exist. That's number one.
Right.
Number two, yes, you could do that, but it isn't necessary because you can spend the Bitcoins.
Yeah.
You don't ever need to convert it into cash.
I want to convert it
into
cash.
And then number three... That's fine. And then number three, the Mercantile Exchange is not trading yet. The CBO is.
CBO, pardon me.
Chicago Board Options Exchange, formerly Chicago Board Options Exchange, is trading. Mercantile Exchange starts on Sunday night.
Got it. Okay, so I could get in. Well, I think I should get a cash out of it because I think this thing's going to tank. I don't think it's really worth $1,700. And if I can turn it into a currency that I can keep, like cash, that's better than watching that thing go zoom down. What do you think of that?
Well, it's the same like stocks, right?
Sure.
Or anyone else who trades commodities. I mean, you can convert your stocks into cash, or you can watch them zoom down when the time comes. So when you're looking at it that way, and again, I'm not a Bitcoin preacher at all. I just see it as what it is. It is an asset class, and it is something that, maybe not Bitcoin specifically, but some of the cryptocurrencies, they are spendable, and they therefore are a currency to me.
By the way, Violetta and Steve and I were all sitting here yesterday, and we were all coming up with questions that I thought were pretty good. Do you remember what any of them were, Violetta? Like things you want to know about Bitcoin? The experts on the line here.
Well, okay. So where do you get a Bitcoin?
Well, you don't. Wait. Let me go first. You don't get a Bitcoin because it's not a coin. It's not a thing. It's
okay. A virtual Bitcoin. Where do I get a virtual
I have no idea.
Bitcoin?
I don't know where you get a virtual Bitcoin.
You get a Bitcoin in the same way that you get an email. We used to get physical mail. But now we get email. well, very few of us get any physical mail. So you get a digital unit, so to speak.
And where do I get that? How do I get that? How do I get that?
You can go to any number of exchanges. There's an exchange called Gemini. There's an exchange called Bitfinex. There's another one called Coinbase. There's CoinDesk. There's Bitcoin.com.
Got it. Can I do this online by myself, like with like a Schwab account, or do I need to go? So I could go online. Give me the website I could go to right now and buy a Bitcoin.
Bitcoin.com.
You could go to Bitcoin.com, or you could go to Coinbase.
Okay. And then
open an account with your currency of choice, and then you begin transacting.
So then I transfer $10,000, whatever, out of my checking or savings. Boy, I got to run this by Brenda and put it in there. And then when she says, what did you do today? I'm going to say, look at this. I got us a shiny Bitcoin. Right?
That would be correct.
Yeah.
So is there a difference between buying a Bitcoin online and then buying shares of Bitcoin? Obviously.
There is no actual shares of Bitcoin at this point. Essentially, the coins are what you buy. The digital currencies are what you buy.
But you don't have to buy a whole one, right? Didn't you say that, like, if a Bitcoin's $1,700, I could buy $1,000 worth of Bitcoin, right?
Yes, you could. Think of it as like a dollar has 100 pennies in it. There's units of Bitcoin.
Yeah, okay. Well, I think that's what Violetta was going after. So, in other words, if you don't have the price, if you don't have $1,700, you could buy half a Bitcoin, yeah. Yeah.
What are the chances that this particular currency, Bitcoin, will fall out of favor and be worthless
100%.
In 2 or 3 years?
100%.
I don't know if it's 100%, but I think it's likely. I look at the original Bitcoin, which is the one that everyone's talking about now that's trading at $17,000 as my
1700, space. Yeah.
The actual
7,000.
Wait, say it again. It's trading at how much?
7,000.
Say it again?
17,000.
Oh. Look at me trying to correct the guy.
Right.
He happens to know what he's talking
about.
You
can't even afford a quarter coin.
A quarter bit.
It's like as of the last time I checked, there were over 1,037 different cryptocurrencies. A handful of them will survive, and they will be around, and your kids will be using them to buy things. I just don't know that it's this particular Bitcoin.
Oh, I see.
Will there eventually be just one?
No, I think there'll be more than one in the same way that we have euros and Swiss francs and U.S. dollars. I think there'll be more than one.
But what's the point of getting rid of money and going to Bitcoins or virtual money?
Well, again, like you have a U.S. dollar, and the only time you realize the value of that dollar is when you go overseas, right? Otherwise, the value for you doesn't change. Prices change, but the value of a dollar is a dollar. So I remember when I was a kid, Violetta, you were not alive. I would go buy a gallon of milk with $2, and now I need $3 and change to get a gallon of milk.
Yeah.
So the value of my dollar went down, but you don't really notice it.
But if I wanted to buy a gallon,
cryptocurrencies do the same thing.
Pardon me, I keep cutting you off, and I apologize for that there,
that's okay.
Bob. But if I wanted to buy a gallon of milk with my Bitcoin right now, I can't go to the Walgreens over here that sells milk or Trader Joe's. They're not going to take my Bitcoin, so I'd have to turn that into money somehow, right?
Well, if you were one of the people who, the younger generation than yourself, John, who might get their milk from Amazon, you could. Or you could get a Walgreens gift card with Bitcoin.
You can? You can get a Walgreens gift card with Bitcoin?
There's over 50,000 retailers that sell through a particular website that sell gift cards based on Bitcoin.
Huh.
Now, there's a middleman there. The company takes the Bitcoin and holds them and buys the gift card for you and gives it to you, but that's not relevant for the conversation.
Yeah.
You can buy gift cards in U.S. dollars and go spend them.
Now, wait, didn't you guys have milkmen when...
All right, we're done. Thank you for your...
Actually, was a milkman.
Bobby Acino is the chief market strategist for Path Trading Partners. All right, I'll call you with more real simple questions that will demonstrate my profound confusion about this maybe next week, but thanks for your time, Bob.
I'll be here. Thanks, guys.
That's Bob Iacino, Chief Market Strategist, Path Trading Partner. Sarah Huckabee Sanders' press conference, her White House press briefing is over. Predictably, the first question was about the president's tweet today about New York Senator, what's her first name, Gillibrand?
Kirsten Gillibrand.
Kirsten Gillibrand, in which, I don't want to paraphrase it, here it is. The president tweeted today, lightweight Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, a total flunky for Chuck Schumer and someone who would come to my office begging for campaign contributions not so long ago, parentheses, and would do anything for them, close parentheses, is now in the ring fighting against Trump. Very disloyal to Bill and crooked used exclamation point. Not sure how to read all of that, but the operative part here is, and would do anything for them, campaign
contributions.
Right, and
so if you see it through the frame of yesterday, Gillibrand called on Trump to resign over the sexual abuse allegations.
Sure, so that's him fighting back.
Voting in Alabama, so it's all sex, it's a behavior. If you read the quote through that lens, you know, the and would do anything. I mean, I know several women who thought that was sexual. Sanders said today that those people have their minds in the gutter.
If you read that as a sexual reference, then I have my mind in the gutter.
Right, that there's nothing sexist about it, and that he may well have tweeted something in similar language about men in the past that they were in. You know, and he has said that during debates. He goes, you know, these people come and they beg me for money, and yeah. I know how the system works. They'll do anything to get the money. So that's how the White House responded to it today.
I think it's the parentheses that throw me off.
Why is that?
Putting it in parentheses sets it aside. Like
I know, it
anything.
Does. It's a wink. It's a punctuation wink. It's like, oh, and by the way, you know what I mean? It's an elbow. It's a wink. It's and would do anything for them. Here's the quote again. Lightweight Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, total flunky for Schumer, would come to my office begging for campaign contributions not so long ago and would do anything for them. See, now the way I read it, it's hard to read this. This is the problem with Twitter. I can read it and make it sound benign. I can read it and make it sound sexual. The parentheses, I think, to Violetta's point, make it sound more like a double entendre, that he's suggesting something here.
The Sanders quote is, only if your mind is in the gutter, end quote.
Let me see if I can read it so that it's not sexual. Would come to my office begging for campaign contributions not so long ago and would do anything for them. I can't.
Well, no, you can. I mean,
all right, you try it.
Well, I don't have it in front of me, but it's like, yeah, you know, she would come to my office. She would beg for contributions. She would do anything to get the money.
But I got to use the exact words. For campaign contributions not so long ago and would do anything for them is now in the ring fighting against Trump. Let me see if I can read it so that it's. You know what he's doing.
How would Corey Lewandowski read it?
He would say, first of all, you're stupid. You haven't read my book and you don't follow the news. And then he would say, she would come begging for campaign contributions not so long ago and would do anything for them and is now in the ring fighting against Trump. And that's the way I heard it when I read it the first time.
And in the parentheses, it indicates a wink, wink, nod, nod kind of thing.
I think she's right. Yeah, I think that the parentheses sort of say, oh, and by the way, I mean, if it was just part of that, this is the way he talks about all politicians.
But, you know, he
does. Wouldn't need to set it. Yeah, but then you wouldn't need to set it aside in parentheses.
I mean, I'm going back to some of the early Republican debates where he's like, I know how the system works. These people, they all come to me asking for money, right? And then they'll give me what I want in exchange for the money.
When he said she had blood coming out of everywhere.
Well, that's
did you
not
think
the
that
same.
Was? I think this is exactly the same thing.
Do you? Okay.
Really? Are you and I in different places on this?
No, I'm not. I'm just saying I think you can read it two different ways. And I was wrong about the blood thing at the time.
How so? What was your first thought?
I gave him a pass on that. Don't laugh at me. I'm telling you I made a mistake.
Wah, wah. Well, I don't know that you made a mistake.
I think we were working Saturdays together then.
Yeah, but how did your changing think? It's not like he said yes.
More evidence.
More evidence that what? That he's
well,
in...
when that was during the summer, during an early debate when he said that. And yeah. At the time I said... A guy running for president wouldn't
say something like that. Wouldn't reference that.
He said other things since then that, you know, indicate he probably would.
Yeah. And I think this is an example of that, don't you?
Well, you could make that case. Yeah. I mean, gutter mind.
Yeah, well, I guess I have my mind in the gutter too then, because when I saw that, and this was the conversation I had with Kim when she read it the first time for us at 1 o'clock, and that was, I'm glad that I'm not the only one who read that and went, oh, man, are you kidding me? And I worry that that's my hypersensitivity, my hyper-dislike of this president. But it seems like other people have picked up on it, too. So I'm not alone on this. Maybe that was what he was suggesting. People are sure wondering about that. It's 2:55, Rokan and Anna DeVlantis stroll into the studio in just a minute on WGN. Anna DeVontis is in the studio now. Hi, Anna.
Hi there, John. How are you?
Good. When you heard that tweet, did you hear it the way a lot of other people heard it? Or did you think that was just a one-off?
I guess I try to interpret these now in the mind of the president. And yes, I did. I did sort of hear that inference.
So that he was making a sexual comment or a sexist
comment. It was snide
comment.
For sure. I mean, at the very least.
Well, it's one thing to say, everybody wants money from me. It's another thing to suggest that a woman would compromise herself.
Yes, much different
for money.
Story.
And now, that's the way I heard it.
Sarah Huckabee just gave her press, the White House press conference in the last half hour, and she said, "Well, the president's used that same line, that same verbiage to describe his reaction to men, and so I'm sure people will be combing into his past to see if he really." Has.
Well, and I think they'll find that he has. I still don't know that. Okay, so that he's been, been disparaging of men doesn't mean that you should also disparage women.
Right.
But
great point.
And it's not apples and oranges anyway. When you say something about a woman in that context, it resonates differently than if you say it about a guy. Anyway, what are you guys doing today?
Well, we are going to be talking to Tom Skilling. And he's going to be updating us on what to expect over the next few days. You had a rough commute yesterday, as Roe predicted. Remember, there was a little bit of controversy over that.
I was going to apologize to Roe because...
doubted him. Like, what?
Like, Roe, no, it's not going to snow.
Started it, are you kidding?
It really snowed.
So we'll talk to him. Richard Roper is going to review The Last Jedi. It's officially out of its embargo, so we're allowed to hear the very first reviews about the new Star Wars film. Alderman Riley stops by for his Tuesdays with Riley, talking about local issues, and then Top 5 of 5 You Won't Believe, and so much more.
Well, I'm out of here. You have a really good show.